Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
And I'm Dr. Redmond.
And we're back for season 11. I hope you enjoyed the break. I know we did. Let's get right into it, because this is the season where, you know, Derek gets segued off the show. And this first episode is the storyline that leads to that happening. So let's do it.
Okay, the job. When two men, one in Albany, New York, and one in Seattle, Washington, are found dead with a distinctive face mask painted on their faces, the BAU sets out to track down a highly skilled hitman who is targeting his former clients. Meanwhile, Hotch asks forensic psychologist and potential new team member Tara Lewis to assist in the investigation.
Aww. Ah, yes. I was looking over my review of this episode before, you know. Just to have it fresh in my mind, what I thought of it last time. Mm-hmm. And I didn't, my feelings didn't change that much when I watched it again.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not like I'm like, you know, last time I thought it was terrible, but this time I think it's a brilliant hour of telling me. No, it's not great.
That would never happen.
I know. Yeah, if only that were to ever happen, right? Seriously, though, I watched the episode and I'm like, first off, you know, an okay introduction to Tara Lewis, although it's weird because they like, remember when they, had, Alex join the show, right? And they're like introducing her with her special ability, which is to understand how language works. And so she can tell where you're from based on how you form sentences and what kind of word choice you use.
Yes.
And then they never really did that again. Like, they never found it. Like, I think in her entire 2 years on the show, they found maybe two other times to use her special ability. And yet, you know, Spencer Reed is doing a geographic profile every week. So I found that weird, right? And so this episode, they do the same thing with Tara Lewis. Because they have that scene at the end where they're like, you're a trained actor who knows how to work with, completely understands how people talk and, you know, the emotions that they get across when they do things. And you would be the perfect person to talk to somebody on the phone and impersonate someone. And I'm like, so this is going to be a thing with her character, right? And no, never comes up again.
Never happens again.
Ever. Although, you know, Tara Lewis is an interesting character that I look forward to talking about, because I had remembered them doing the stuff with her fiance, like, immediately. But it isn't. It's like an episode 4, so we're going to be talking about it next week. Yeah, so there's some stuff with Tara Lewis that I can't wait to get into, but we're not going to start talking about our theories for Tara Lewis until we actually get to, you know, scenes where there's episodes for them. Sorry, evidence for them.
Okay, yeah, I guess so.
I don't know, I think we'll have to, we'll have to eventually. But anyway, this episode is very frustrating to me because it opens in just the stupidest fashion. So you get this scene where they're in Los Angeles, oh my god. They're in Seattle, right? And two guys are looking at a dead body in the ground, and then the cops, you know, are surprised because David Rossi is already there, being like, we've got a body just like this one in upstate New York, so this is our case now. To which I respond, how on earth did this man get there in time to do this?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the big issue. I mean, I did like the cop going, sure, it's yours.
Yeah, whatever, I don't care. I have no emotional stake in this case.
Right. But no, that was what, because he would have had to have. So when did this, how did he find out about this painted face?
Exactly.
Right? That's the big problem, is that they've just seen it. The two cops have just seen it.
Yep.
So what? The BAU has a mole in the Seattle Police Department that has flashed this painted picture? Yeah, or the hitman? Did the hitman send them the picture?
Well, we know the hitman didn't.
Well, yeah. You know what
but
I mean.
But that would have been a good explanation. No, like seriously, did the cop who found the, or maybe, okay, here is my closest thing to an explanation, right? And it's not a good explanation. Let's say the cops didn't find the body. Let's say a guy who was coming to buy drugs or help the guy cook meth turned up and found the body. And before calling the cops, he snapped a picture of the dude's face and put it on Instagram because he thought it was weird that his friend's face was, you know, all brutalized when he was murdered. Now, I can't think of a reason anyone would do this, but let's say he did that. And Penelope, just doing a global search for weird painted faces, saw the Instagram post about this dead body and I was like, hey guys, check this out. And then Joe was like, I'll get on a plane immediately. Joe and Derek were like, we'll get on the plane this second, and just rushed out there. Now, that is the only conceivable way they could have beaten the detectives to the scene. And, oh, by the way, also the guy with the Instagram thing didn't call the cops until he had, like, cleared all of the money and extra meth out of the lab. So he took, like, 4 hours to do that. Okay, so if all of that's true, if he immediately put up the Instagram thing, then took 4 hours before calling the cops, yes, they could have made it. Now, obviously, that's not what happened, but that's the only way what we're watching on the show could have happened.
Yeah, something along those lines anyway. I mean, like, it's just...
the cops aren't even there yet, because how this works is, and we've been told how this works time and again, a murder happens, right? The details of the murder are taken down by the cops. The cops phone that information or use a computer to submit it to VICAP. And VICAP matches details of crimes to other details of crimes. That's what VICAP is for, and it does an okay job. But in this situation, no, they could not have beaten the cops there. In my review, I'm like, maybe he could have if he was visiting his daughter in San Francisco and he hopped on a commuter jet immediately when he found out about it. As you say,
how did Derek?
From their mole in the thing. But then Derek's there too, so there's no way.
I know. Oh. And given how little interest the Seattle cops have in this particular case.
Why would they have already sent the information to VICAP? Good question.
You know, I mean, it would have gone to the bottom of the pile.
Yeah.
But then again, we wouldn't have had a show, so...
No, that's true. You'd have to accept that, you know, they want to make a show, and they're not good at writing, so we just have to let them get away with this stuff from time to time. But I'm going to ask you the question I asked in my review, and let's see if you can come up with something here. Why did the guy paint his victims' faces?
I have no idea. I've never had any idea. The only thing I can say is that so Reed can be really, really smart about the
origins of mimes. And
that's all.
Yeah.
So that they could come to this whole business of he can't speak. Although I'm still trying to figure out, if you want to know the question I have, is I'm looking at the stitching up of his face and everything else, and I'm going, excuse me, well, why is... who did this horrible job on his face?
Presumably it's like a veterinarian or something.
But you know, even like, so...
Oh no, it should not look that bad after a couple of weeks. You're absolutely right.
You know, I mean, this has happened because he's had two kills. Well, technically he's been able to find the woman and her cop husband.
Yep.
And he's moved in there, and then he's finding...
gone out and killed two people after doing that. So this is a not insignificant... You're absolutely right. This is a not insignificant amount of time since he got shot in the face. Yeah,
and his face shouldn't still be in that kind of a
condition,
terrible
no.
condition, right?
Because no, it's not like this is just 3 days later or some idiocy like that.
Yeah, no. And it's he's, you know, unless he just has a problem with his healing abilities. I don't know. You know, I mean, I could, you know, far-fetched start looking, but I'm going, no. And then pulling open those stitches, give me a break.
I know.
So he can still speak.
Yep.
And he could have made noise.
So. Oh, absolutely.
And he could have probably spoken out of the side of his face, because it's not like his whole mouth is tied up.
Well, and I mean, they do this scene where he's got like a valve in his stomach for the insurer, right? And so I asked, I know someone who has a valve in their stomach for insurer. And I'm like, people don't need to do that. Would that be completely healed up after 3 weeks, 4 weeks? And they were like, no. Like, he would still have to have, it's essentially, you know, an open wound that you're pumping food into, and it and you need constant maintenance. It is not like a discrete tube that disappears into your stomach with no markings. And they were also like, if this man has nothing wrong with his throat or tongue or mouth, there is no reason to do a stomach thing. Like, yeah, if his jaw is wired shut because he got shot in the face, he can still drink with a straw without any trouble at all.
Yeah.
Like, and the stomach tubes are for people who literally, their throats don't work. That's all they're for. So, yeah, like, there's no reason for him to have the stomach tube at all. And here's my question about how this guy operates, right? Which is, I mean, again, I'm not a hitman. I'm not trying to get revenge for somebody who ambushed me. But if I got ambushed in Atlantic City, which is where he got shot in the face, right? I feel like I would start my search for who is responsible for that among all of my clients in that general area. Right?
In New Jersey.
Yeah, in New Jersey. And so the killing guy in upstate New York, I mean, it's pretty far from New Jersey, but I mean, it's the same general vicinity. And then you move on to the guys in Virginia and Baltimore. But why is he going out to Seattle?
Like, I have why no does he idea. Think
oh no this guy in Seattle, that's definitely the guy I'm looking for.
Why is it all of these other guys? You know, you start with the most recent, because none of the other guys have tried it, so you start with the most recent and work back.
Exactly.
Not go to the first one and move forward.
No, and
I don't think so.
That would have caught the right guy immediately,
and then we would have had no show.
That's true, yeah. They would have had no show. But honestly, we shouldn't have a show anyway, because this guy, who's supposedly an unbelievably practiced serial killer, i.e. hitman, who, like, has never been on anyone's radar and never been caught, suddenly decides to do a thing to attract the cops' attention with this whole doing the face paint. And, like, they're like, maybe it's a way to threaten, scare his clients, or to, threaten people in other criminal organizations, to which I say, but how are they going to find out that happened? Like, it's not like you're going to publicize the fact that this man's face had weird makeup put on it.
No.
Like, there's no reason to publicize. Like, there's no, it frustrates me so much, because it's like, oh, well, he was working out some internal thing. Yeah, you were working out your internal anger about the insure thing by killing them by injecting insure into their brain. I get that you had, like, some emotional stuff about how you can only eat a liquid diet from now on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're working that through with your murder method. But why are you also doing the mask? Like, the insure is enough, right?
You would think.
Yeah. Okay. I guess I'm being naive again, expecting this guy to make sense. But yeah, it's such a baffling episode, because it's like everything they use to catch him. I don't like, why is this guy hanging out at these random people's house? Like, using them as his chauffeur. Like, what is there to gain by doing that?
I have no idea. I honestly have no idea.
Okay, good. I am glad. Also, I don't understand why he has to do all, why he has to get all of this surveillance done on the people who hired him. Wouldn't they have done that the previous time when they hired him in the first place? Because as we learned from Kat Adams... these people fully investigate all of the people who hire them, like, to the point of, you know, taking apart their lives and stalking them, right? Because she has got, like, a full bio on every person they've who's hired her, so she can decide which people she wants to kill instead of killing people for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, why are they only just now doing looking into these people? I feel like they should have already done that. In fact, they were already doing it because the guy only killed the hitman because he realized all of his electronics and whatnot were being tracked by the super hacker who works for these people.
Yeah.
Ah, the super hacker. I'm just remembering where this story goes.
Yeah. Now that we're...
Yeah.
Oh,
it's not a very good story.
No, I know. I just... This story doesn't make too much sense. I don't understand why this cop wouldn't have known that his wife was an addict.
Yeah.
I don't understand why... Any of it. Where did she get the money to hire the hitman to kill her
rapist.
Dealer.
It's 40 grand. That's not a small amount of money.
It's not like the cop in this little town is making a huge amount of money.
Well, maybe she's got family money, but the bigger issue, right, is if you got $40,000 lying around, you can probably get, oxycodone from a shady doctor. You don't have to go to some creepy dealer. You got $40,000 kicking around. Also, everybody, and this is something I learned recently because I watched the documentary about the Golden State Killer. Here's just a lesson I learned. Never, ever, 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 ever buy what you're told is oxycodone or even Valium from a street dealer. Because apparently what they do is they essentially make a pill that's chalk.
Yeah.
Right? And has a tiny grain of fentanyl in it. And, if your dealer isn't that good at, crafting this thing, the fentanyl will kill you. Because it can be expensive to get Xanax or oxycodone or, any number of calming drugs. And fentanyl has roughly the same effect, so... They buy just a case of fentanyl from a Chinese pharmacy and they make the fake drugs themselves. So yeah, I hate to be in favor of the pharmaceutical industry, but at least they're not going to give you a piece, a pill of chalk and fentanyl if you think you're getting Xanax. So yeah, this woman was making all kinds of bad decisions in her life. Even before she hired the hitman.
And what does this say about the black market if getting Xanax, which you can get on a prescription, and it's not like opioids.
Yeah.
You can just get it on a prescription. What does this say about street drugs, the price of street drugs versus the price of prescription drugs? Oh, I don't know. I mean, is that what it tells you? I don't know. Yeah, there's been a lot of deaths, actually, from people who buy stuff from street drugs where they've laced it with.
Well, yeah, I mean, because if you think about it, if you try to go to Merck, Sackler or whatever the drug company is called that the Sacklers own, if you try to get oxycodone from them, that's $20 a pill. But the guy making his homemade fake fentanyl can make that pill for 50 cents, right? And then he's going to charge you $10-$15 from it, so it's a better deal, but it's not actually oxycodone, and it probably will kill you. I mean, we're losing thousands of people a week to this stuff. So,
well,
you live in Sault Ste. Marie.
Yeah, well, we've got problems here, but it's so far. Oh, I don't know. The biggest place that we know of is certainly British Columbia, and what gets to me is that they are providing, at the beginning of the COVID epidemic, they began providing drugs. So you really didn't need to go
dealer.
But people still went to street dealers.
Well, it's because they're used to it. It's hard to, get people to accept a new thing.
Yeah.
Portugal has basically defeated drugs, right? By just giving away free heroin. But you have to take the heroin here. But you know what? That didn't happen right away. People still did what they were used to for a couple of years. They had to get used to the idea that, no, this isn't a joke. we're literally giving you free drugs. It's not a trap. And that's a hard thing for people to wrap their head around.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, it's the same thing with marijuana, that there are still people who go to their street dealers for their marijuana because they're used to it.
Yeah.
And I'm going, but
it's so much more expensive.
Why would you do that? I mean, to me, because it takes a long time and I don't know. As you say, it's what people are used to, and I'm going.
No, I mean, and so this woman, like, I have very, and this is one of those situations where I just have 100% sympathy for this woman's situation. Like, she's a drug addict, so I already have sympathy for her. She's a victim of sexual assault, 100% I have sympathy for her. And the only person she wanted to kill was a rapist, and, I mean, my position on murdering rapists has been well established here on the show. I'm in favor.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm 100% down with this woman's action. So it's kind of sad that obviously she's going to jail at the end of the episode. Although, weirdly, they also act like her husband's going to jail at the end of the episode. For, like, that he's because he tries to claim that he's, I'm responsible, it's not my wife, blah, 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 blah. But I'm like, well, no one's going to believe that. But B, yeah, you're in trouble, but you're not in the kind of trouble she is, because all of your crimes were, you know, after the fact. She hired somebody to murder somebody. Yeah. You just tried to help her get away with it.
You did the cover up. You're going to lose your job.
Oh, absolutely.
It's and a whole bunch of things.
You'll probably go to jail for a few years. I'm not, you know, going to pretend you're not, but
depending on how good a cop he was, he might he might get probation or something. And
that's true. You're right. Like, the crazier things have happened.
Yeah. But yeah, it's weird. Like, so I guess you could assume that this cop felt so guilty because he hadn't picked up what his wife was doing.
Well, I mean, that's they're going to, I mean, we've already seen the rest of the show, so we know, but it's like, they are going to go down that road again later when they actually try to do an episode of, like, their embarrassing episode that is actually about the opioid crisis.
Oh, yes. Well,
so it's like, they did go back to the well of the cop whose wife is a secret addict, and he feels really guilty for not noticing it and helps her try to, you know, get out of trouble and manage the situation. So it's not like this isn't a plot thread we've seen before.
Oh, well, let's see if we can do it better the second time.
They can't.
No.
So now, can we talk about, like, the dumbest scene in the show?
Which one?
Which is, so the killer gets a phone call from, he goes to kill the guy in the garage, right? And we don't see him do the whole interview to find out if this is the guy who attacked him, right? So we don't see him do that whole interview, but I guess that happened off camera. And we cut to the guy, the cops and the team running in and seeing him with a grenade and, like, taped to his hands. And they're like, oh my God, at some point his hand's gonna, taped, oh my God, super glued to his hands. At some point, his hand's gonna get tired, and he's gonna release that spoon, and then he's gonna blow himself up. We've gotta figure out a way to release it. And I'm like, no, you don't.
As long as
people, that's super not glued. How grenades work.
Well, it's super glued.
It's super glued to his hand, but the point is, yes, the spoon could still come up, and it isn't until the spoon comes up that the fuse starts, and then once the fuse is started, there's no stopping a grenade. I think, theoretically, you might be able to take the grenade apart before the fuse detonates, but I would not, you know, like anybody's chances on that. I'm basing that in the movie Hard Target, and I'm not 100% sure that's accurate. But seriously, like, the thing that bothered me about it, right, when I'm watching this scene, is, like, they're acting like, oh no, like, he's gonna blow us all up, blah, 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 blah. Literally just, there's gotta be tape around this place. It's a garage. Just tape his hand shut around the grenade. Problem solved. Like, you can put a new pin back into the grenade, and then the spoon can't, because how grenades work is, there's a fuse, and the spoon keeps the fuse from activating. And there's a pin, so you pull out the pin, and that unlocks the spoon, and then the spoon is spring-loaded, so it will fly off, and that activates the fuse. But as long as the spoon is held down, even if you pull the pin, you can just put the pin back in to re-secure the spoon. And again, this is a garage. There's wire Everywhere. There's wire. So what's the problem, guys? They have to go through this ridiculous system of, oh, let's melt it off of his hands by burning his skin with acid. Oh, no, the acid's going to set off the grenade. Like this, it's such a crazy thing to do.
Well, my problem with that scene was that the guy was consistently distracting me, going, geez, he looks like Tony Shalhoub.
He does, doesn't he? Oh, God, I didn't think that the first time, but you're totally right.
Like, I was sitting there the first time even, but, you know, I mean, it's not. No, of course not. Poor guy is going to forever be sort of trapped in terms of roles because he looks like Tony Shalhoub, right?
It would be weird if it turned out that was Tony Shalhoub's, camera stand-in.
And he's also an actor.
No, yeah, it easily could be.
Well, because the guy on Babylon 5 was Bruce Willis's stand-in.
Yeah, and looked just like Bruce. Yeah, he had done that. And
he looks reasonably like Bruce Willis.
There's literally an episode of Moonlighting where they're, having a him look-alike conversation, and Jerry Doyle played the guy who wins the looks like him competition in an episode of Moonlighting. So it's like, I'm sure it impacted his career looking almost exactly like Bruce Willis.
Yeah. Now, J. Michael Straczynski didn't care, but.
No, of course not. No. He's
much
bigger than that.
And he doesn't. In fact, it takes it away.
Oh, completely. You don't think about it at all.
No, you don't. But.
No, Jerry Doyle's the
same kind of problem.
But yeah, this is absolutely the same kind of problem where it's hard to look at him without thinking about Tony Shalhoub.
Yeah.
And what was the other thing? Oh, yes. And of course, this episode, like the way they find the killer is so ridiculous to me because they're like, why does this guy have a brochure about houses when he just put $40,000 into escrow the other day? Right? Meaning he must have bought a house. And I'm like, maybe he just still has the magazine from when he was shopping for houses? Maybe he didn't immediately throw that magazine away? Like, it's such a weird thing to base your profile on, but they're like, the escrow payment must be the $40,000. So we're going to find out who hired this killer by looking at every financial transaction in America. And finding people who paid $20,000 before someone died and then another $20,000 a couple of weeks later after that person died. And I'm like, hey, first off, we see the guy with the house brochures banking and he didn't do 20 and 20. He just paid the $40,000. So your theory that way goes. B, you have access to every financial transaction in America? Like, I often joke about her, like, violating medical records, but apparently she does it for financial records, too.
Well, clearly in this case, yes.
But, and then the worst part is, you get there and then it's like, but if that's how they found him and that's how he universally, gets paid for his crimes, why weren't they able to find the wife as well? Because she wasn't on their list of the, like, four people in America who did that same kind of suspicious transaction. Hey. Weird, right?
Well, yes, but maybe she used a fake male's name. I don't know.
But I'm just saying, even if she used a fake name, it still would have been on their list of transactions.
Well,
and
yes.
And it's not.
I know.
Because the show's sloppy. And now the worst part of the show, which is, and the thing is, it wasn't the worst part when I'm watching the show, right? It wasn't the worst part when I was watching the episode. But I mean, we're going to talk about the season as a whole going forward. So I do have to mention it here, which is, I think it's good to mention it here. They should have had Derek kill this guy. Like, if you wanted this guy dying to be the impetus that leads to Derek leaving the show, how are you not smart enough to see that you gotta have Derek kill the guy?
Yeah, well, maybe Derek wasn't leaving the show when this was first done.
Oh, I'm You think he wasn't planning to, like, they hadn't already planned to segue him off the show? Like, he wasn't... Because I have to imagine he... Well, actually, I say that, but no, I'm wrong, because if, like, if they had decided not to go forward with SWAT, it's not like he would have quit the show anyway, right?
Right. See, yeah. This is September 30th, 2015 is the airing of this.
Yeah.
So you have to figure that the writing must have started probably June.
Yeah.
Easily. You know, the sort of putting together the entire envisioning the entire
whole arc for the season.
Yeah. And so they might not have, because if he was, his agent might have been in talks, but his agent isn't, and he is not going to say a damn thing until.
It's all inside at CBS, and he is a CBS yeah. man. Everyone on Criminal Minds knew he was getting his own pilot, right, this year. But what they wouldn't have known is whether that pilot was going to get picked up. So they laid, at the beginning of the season, they laid the groundwork for how he would leave if SWAT got picked up and went to series. But they wouldn't, like, pencil themselves in, because if SWAT didn't get picked up and go to series, obviously he's not going to quit Criminal Minds for no reason. But my point is, just have him kill this guy in a shootout, and then if he's going to leave, well, you've got a reason for Lance Henriksen to be mad at him later in the year. And if he's not going to leave, it's just something that happened at the beginning of the season. And you could say, well, then they won't find out about the Dirty Dozen, blah, 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 blah. He can be, like, grievously injured in the hospital and tell them about it. And then his, you know, he dies from the internal organ damage that Derek did by shooting him. You can still do that end scene. But the problem is, like, the whole end of the season is built around Lance Henriksen blaming Derek specifically for the death of his son, but his son was killed by his own partners via poison. Like, but Derek's the one who put him in jail. No, like, the FBI put him in jail. Derek's just the guy who happened to be in a foot chase with him. But if you change it so Derek shot him in a shootout as the guy was trying to escape, then Lance Henriksen has a reason to be mad at Derek, and the end of the season works in a way that fundamentally it doesn't now. Does that make sense? My complaint?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah, no, it does. Well, yes, that's the whole point. And yeah. I mean, we get to that later on. We're going to be talking
about that towards the end of the season. You're absolutely right.
You know,
we don't have to get into it
today, except that just when people get,
like I said, I was looking over my review.
Down.
Yeah. Yeah, but when I was looking at my review, of course, my review was written not having seen the rest of the season. So none of that stuff about, you know, why doesn't he kill him is in there. And it's just like when I'm watching the episode for the second time, which is only the second time I've ever seen the episode. Yeah. I can't help but notice how much more elegant it would have been had they structured it that way and had this guy get killed by Derek. Like, it just would have made more sense
in the car.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Derek, or they even could have done a foot chase. And at the end of the foot chase, he pulls his gun and Derek shoots him. You know, that would have been fine. Yeah. Like, however they wanted to handle it, Derek should have killed him, because that makes the exit plan for Derek more logical later. All right. But that's enough of that. Let's move on to the second episode of the season. The one I'm most excited to talk about, obviously.
Well, yes, because
we all know.
Yes. No.
Yeah.
The Witness. When 10 civilians die in a sarin attack, gas attack on a Los Angeles, California commuter bus, the BAU works with the local FBI field office to determine whether the incident was isolated or a deliberate act of terrorism.
Well, sorry, synopsis writer, but those two aren't mutually exclusive. I mean, terrorists can do just one act. Terrorists don't have to keep dropping other bombs places. Like, you can still be a terrorist even if you just blow up, or in this case, poison, the one bus.
Yes. And it should have said whether the incident is personal,
yes,
or
personally motivated,
act. Yeah.
Or an act of domestic
terrorism.
Which
is what they say in the episode.
Oh, yeah, no. It's entirely the synopsis.
And what
I'm not faulting the episode here.
It still goes to my... I mean, I know that these people who have written all of these have watched the show.
Yeah.
They have to have watched the show. But there are times when I'm going, are you sure you watched the show? The
same episode I did. I know.
You know, are you sure? And there are some times where I'm going, you didn't watch it at all.
Yeah.
But anyway, but yes, the episode, you feel so sorry for him.
I know. Well, so we're big fans of Tim Kang because he was Cho on The Mentalist.
Yeah.
You know, the best non-lead character on The Mentalist. He put in an amazing performance year after year after year. When they changed the premise of the show, of course they were going to keep Cho in the last season. Because you can't do it without him. He was fantastic. He's always going to be fantastic. Currently, he's playing the local detective that Magnum P.I. helps out and gets favors from on Magnum P.I. And he's doing a great job there, too. There. So we are 100% pro-Tim Kang here on the Profiling Criminal Minds podcast.
Yep.
We're giant fans of him. And fun part about this is, you know, that list I have you making of when they're ripping off movies on the mm-hmm. show. Well, this is based on the Jeff Bridges movie, Arlington Road.
Right.
Yeah. So be sure to make a note of that. They have the extra thing about the guy, murdering his wife's lover. That's not in that movie. But the main plot of the whole episode is, you know, Arlington Road themed, especially the big finale. So you can make a note of that as you will. All right, this episode is just complete gibberish from beginning to end. Like, I love Tim Kang. This is a terrible episode of Criminal Minds. Am I being hyperbolic in saying that absolutely nothing makes sense this week? But please, go.
I have to make a comment at this point.
Absolutely.
I didn't want to, but I have to make a comment at this point when you start going absolute gibberish. Because we have now finished. We had to redo this episode.
Yes.
Okay. Because
there was a recording error the first
there was a recording error, heaven knows why, and we only discovered it a little while ago
when we were getting ready to post, a month before we were getting ready to post.
Okay, and so we had to redo this episode.
Yeah,
well, I'm watching these three episodes. I'll say this now, I wasn't going to, but they were such a relief.
Well, I mean, I think 80% of that. Watching... No, absolutely. After season 13, 14, 15, no, it's a pleasure to watch these again. Absolutely.
I mean, seriously, I'm going, you know, we have been going along, right, chronologically. And yeah. I'm sorry because this is kind of out of our chronology structure.
Oh, absolutely.
And I wouldn't, you know, this is, I wouldn't, of course, have said this, but we've been going along chronologically and watching this show slowly go over the cliff. It's coming closer and closer to the cliff, sliding, dropping off the cliff.
Yes.
Okay. And you just forget that it was a slow descent.
It was. Absolutely.
Because I'm watching these episodes, and yet there are so many problems with these episodes. And
but
you can
compared
see where
to what comes after.
But compared to what comes after, this is such a relief, and it's so nice to see Hotch.
I mean, I think we just have to say that it is, and I don't think this is going too far, but if it is, you can tell me. I think it's inarguable that the show did not survive the loss of Thomas Gibson. It just didn't. Like, you look at all of these seasons without him, like, the minute he's not on the show, there is this collapse of the believability of it. There is a collapse of, you know, feeling like you're even watching something that is in any way coherent. Because you're right, I say about this episode that it is a pile of nonsense, and it is a pile of nonsense. But it is a pile of nonsense that moves forward relatively confidently, right?
Yes.
And Thomas Gibson has this, I mean, we use the term to describe him all the time, this gravitas to him that makes you buy into these situations and the way they're investigating them. in a way you wouldn't with anyone else. And we know that because when they tried to do it with Emily, it doesn't work at all.
No, it just doesn't work. And I've always said up to this point that Thomas Gibson at least seems to have cared about his character, about the structure of his episodes, because it's clear that the reason he got fired
was a fight with Virgil the Williams writer about about something that Hotch was supposed to say in an episode, and he was like, "I'm not saying that."
Well, supposedly, it's supposedly not just that he was saying. Remember, he was directing that episode as well.
And he wants his episodes to make sense.
Yeah, and I think we've been arguing this, and it's now that we have finished
the whole show. Yeah.
It is notable when you go back. It's funny because I'm going, am I going to have to go back and watch other episodes again to be reminded of what this show was? Yeah. This almost, the fact that we had a recording problem with these three.
No, it's kind of it's kind of good because it allows us to see that, yeah, there was stuff worth preserving in Criminal Minds.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, yes. So it doesn't matter if they're silly. This episode was, I don't care, between Tim Kang.
Yeah.
You know, it just works.
I mean, this episode, here's what I'll say, right? From a plot standpoint, this episode is terrible. From an emotional standpoint, Tim Kang is so good in this episode that they sell the entire episode to you on his performance.
And it's just wonderful. And that end scene, like, this is one of those ones where I cannot complain that they screwed up the ending, where his daughter is just going, "Daddy."
I know.
Right? As they're taking him away.
Yeah. Which we'll talk about that in a minute, but
never mind.
No. I'm saying you're absolutely right. Like, it's emotionally effective. And the thing is, fundamentally, they were just better at making television before Thomas Gibson left. Like, the later seasons, every episode is just uniquely terrible in its own way. But here, they still knew how to make an episode, and that all went away in season 12, 13, 14. And it was like the behind-the-scenes drama affected them to the point where they weren't even doing their job anymore.
Yeah, I'm beginning to really think about that after watching these three episodes. It's very strange. Mm-hmm. I watched them all yesterday.
Yeah.
And it was very strange watching those episodes and going, oh my God. They could still pull it off, even though, because you still had consistent writers as well. Virgil Williams is still here. Karen Mazur, Sharon Lee Watson, Breen Fraser, a very few
people who were solid and competent people.
Kimberly Ann Harrison was still there. I'm just looking down here at what we're going to see later on. This is still right. There's one person this season, or two people, who are new, and that's it.
Okay.
And you're looking at, but I'm looking at these three episodes, and I said, okay, yeah, there was a reason why we still watch this show.
Yeah, well, I mean, I always joke about how Criminal Minds, every season is worse than the season before it. And that's true. But it goes from a downward slope to falling off a cliff after they lose Thomas Gibson.
Yeah. I think that is just for sure. Those people who quit watching, who shut down their website and quit watching and quit commenting after he was fired, they had the right idea.
Yeah, no, they were right. Yeah. I mean, we kept going because, again, we're more academics than we are fans at this point. right. So we kept watching, but I completely understand their decision to say, "Oh, no Hotch? Well, I'm not watching the show."
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the audience agreed because, you know, their ratings went down every year after he left more precipitously than they had in the past. So there you go.
Yep. And yeah, exactly. No. So that, and it didn't even pick up for the last 10
for the
episodes.
Last, yeah, for the last
Not
season.
Not really.
No, no, that was just for the, like, for the diehards. It was a season that only existed for the diehards. Yep. So yeah, now let's actually get into this episode, because I agree with everything you said. 100%, but we have to talk about this episode. We really do. Because so Tim Kang kills a guy in self-defense. I want to make that clear. 100%, he comes to confront the guy about sleeping with his wife, and the guy pulls a gun on him, and so the guy is threatening to kill him or trying to kill him, because it turns out the guy's a domestic terrorist. Tim Kang didn't know that when he went to confront him, obviously. I think he would have just called the cops on him. Mm-hmm. Right? But so he kills him in self-defense, and he freaks out because he thinks he's going to go to jail. He hides the body. The guy's brother phones him and gets it, and he's like, oh, I'm going to frame this guy for all these various attacks. This is going to be perfect. To which I say, it seems like a weird choice to try and frame someone for your crimes. Like, I don't see what you're going to get out of that, because unless you're planning to kill him, which it doesn't seem like he was, he can just say, here's the phone number of the mysterious man who made me run around and do all this stuff.
Here's my burner phone.
Yeah, here's my burner phone that he's been using to contact me. Here's the package that it was mailed from. Maybe you can trace it that way. Like,
yeah,
because he's not planning to kill him in the explosion or anything, because there's not going to be an explosion. Like, I don't know what he's getting out of this, except for tormenting the guy who killed his brother, but it's possible that he was there to kill his brother anyway, because we find out through text messages later that because the guy was having an affair with this woman, he was having second thoughts about doing the murder. So the guy specifically said the first place we'll attack will be a way to kill that woman so I can get my brother back on my side. So it's not like he and his brother are having the best relationship. So revenge for his brother seems like a weird motivator.
Yeah, I don't think that's it.
Yeah, and so, like, his attempt to frame Tim Kang doesn't make a ton of sense within the narrative. Especially the whole point where it's like, go out to get this laptop from this dead body in this cabin in the woods, right? Mm-hmm. So he sends him to go do that, but then he calls the cops on him.
Yeah, and that doesn't make any sense because the guy's been dead for 3 days.
Exactly.
Or 2 days.
And that's how we know it wasn't a neighbor. That's how we know it was him who called the cops, because the guy's been dead for days. So
yeah,
it wasn't, they didn't actually hear the gunshots. It was the guy calling to set up Tim Kang. But how could he possibly know Tim Kang was going to get away? In fact, there's no logical reason Tim Kang should have been able to get away, because he drove up to that thing and there's only one road leading to the...
Why didn't they run into him as they were coming? Because the cops are coming.
Yeah, we hear the cops. They're on the way. How did he get away exactly, you know?
With his car, because he got away in his car.
Yep.
His red car.
Very noticeable red car.
Right. No cops driving to the site saw a red car going the other way.
Barreling towards them on a dirt road, a dirt access road to get to this cabin? Yeah, that part of it is just baffling. Like, if you want him to be part of your scheme for whatever reason, fine, but then don't have the cops go and arrest him.
No.
Yeah, that part of the plan. And then we get to the single, and I would love to ask the writers what they thought they were doing here. Did they know they had made a mistake, or was it just a cheat? And that scene is Derek and Reed are at the weird rewatching this, how much they paired up Derek and Reed, because they really did pair the two of them up a lot.
Yep.
But anyway, because I mean, they have an interesting combative energy with each other, because Derek's a bully and Reed's a victim. And so their energy is always very interesting. And so I get why they paired them up. To then say that, you know, oh, they're lifelong friends who are closer than anybody. No, one's a bully, one's a victim, and they have a complicated relationship as a result. They're not lifelong best friends.
No.
But we've had that conversation elsewhere, so we're not going to have it here. But anyway, so Derek and Reed, it's just, again, like you were saying, because we haven't seen Derek on the show for so long, it's kind of refreshing to get one of those him and Reed scenes. So they're at the cabin.
Yeah.
And while they're at the cabin, they find out that the dead body is a doctor they'd been looking for, right? Who used to work for a lab that was capable of making sarin, and he got fired and he was mad about it. And he's one of the people on Homeland Security's checklist of the short list of people who could actually make sarin and are mad enough at the world that they might actually do it. But here's my question. They find that out while they're at the cabin. So why do they go to the cabin? Because, spoiler alert, a guy getting shot at a cabin an hour outside Los Angeles is not the FBI's duty to look into. Because there's no suggestion in any way, shape, or form that this murder has anything to do with the crime they're there to investigate until they find out it's the doctor. But they find out it's the doctor when they're already at the cabin, so why did they go to the cabin?
Did I say I have answers for you?
Did you?
No answers for you. If you look at the logic of this, I think that,
it's a complete gibberish episode. I'm right.
I think that there wasn't much they could do about it.
Yeah.
That somebody screwed up and there's no way that they could have had, I was just trying to think about the way they filmed. Like, you couldn't even edit the film so that they found out. Did they find out earlier on and then we're going to visit this guy because he's on the sarin gas list? Yeah. Well, I'm trying to think if you could have edited.
I think literally all you have to do, right? And this is my suggestion. Literally all you have to do is change that line and loop in a line that's saying, it's like, the ID the patrolman found was correct. This is that doctor. So it's just like, say the patrolman found his driver's license and that's why they're there.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, yes, and I'm glad we got confirmation because his face was blown off by a pistol or something. Like, give us a reason that they're there and just have it be, well, the patrolman found the doctor's driver's license on the body, right? Yeah. And so they came out to check, but they can't identify him. And they could still get confirmation that it's definitely him while they're there, because, again, face could have been blown off. We don't know.
Yeah.
All right? And, like, there's ways to do this that track logically, right? But they're obviously, and the problem is, there's no way to write it so they knew, because they're obviously shocked when they find out that this dead body they're there to look at is the doctor. But then we're left with the question, well, why are you there to look at the body?
Yeah.
This isn't even LAPD. This is the LA County Sheriff's Department.
Department, yeah.
Territory. So it's like, there's no reason they would call you in on this. It's not like, oh, the FBI's in town? Let's just have them look at some random other murder. If you want to do that, there's an FBI office in town that can look into it.
Yeah, I think they could have. I mean, the whole thing is that they needed to find out that about this doctor and work that in earlier.
Yeah,
and then absolutely right. Find out where he's staying. And so they're on their way anyway.
And then they find the body. You don't even have to, maybe they're not there with the cops. Maybe they find out that the doctor's money has been, like, credit card has been used to rent a cabin and they find the dead body there. Right? But then that takes away, the only thing you have to change for that to happen is to make it so the killer didn't call the cops on Tim Kang and Tim Kang had to flee from the oncoming cops, which isn't a bad, hard thing to do, because that shouldn't have been happening anyway.
Yeah, the guy, it gives you the idea that somehow or another, the brother terrorist is like an idiot.
Well, he is an idiot, though, because his plan... His plan to destroy the FBI was to release a bunch of sarin gas bombs in the airtight trunk of a car where they're not going to hurt anybody. That was his plan. I want to make it clear. In this episode, the killer's plan goes off without a hitch.
Yeah.
And when his plan goes off without a hitch, nobody dies because he was terrible at making plans.
Yeah, well, okay, yes. Well, that's what he gets for growing up in a cult.
That's true.
That doesn't teach
you. I just don't understand how, yeah, who doesn't teach science.
Yeah, that doesn't teach science, right? Except how to create sarin gas.
Yeah, but I don't. It's funny because you get that scene in the episode where they're like debating whether, oh, well, is it just a guy who wants to murder people, or is it, you know, a group of people doing it for a political reason? I'm like, it can be both. Like, those are not mutually exclusive motives. Like, a guy can be really mad at the world and also have a specific person he wants to kill. Like, these are not mutually exclusive motives in any way, shape, or form. But the show acts like, well, no, it has to be either or. Like,
yeah, well, yeah, they do that. They do that a lot, though. They want
that's
to,
true. You're right.
It's the kiss thing. Keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah, you're right. They want there to only be one motive anytime there's a crime.
We
they
don't want it to be easily complicated, and yet it's very complicated for poor Tim Kang.
Oh, I know. And again, I don't understand why they're saying he's going to jail at the end of the episode.
Yeah,
like, the man deserves a medal. He exposed a sarin gas attack on the city. And yeah, I mean, he did it by killing a man in self-defense and then panicking and hiding the body. But yeah, he still stopped a sarin gas attack. It's like at the end of Fargo season one, where it's like, yeah, Colin Hanks murdered Lorne Malvo. Like, he could have called the cops, he could have done things, but no. He laid in wait, and he murdered Lorne Malvo, but he gets a commendation for having done that. Because Lorne Malvo's a guy who had to get killed, you know? I kind of feel like they should treat Tim Kang in this episode the same way.
Well,
like, that guy had to go.
Okay, I think that they decided, you see, so they're arresting him. Like, it's an incident, but however, we can write the happy ending.
He gets a good lawyer.
His wife now is so friggin' guilty.
Well, she was sleeping with a terrorist.
And you know, and as you say, it was self-defense, and that was the thing that's pretty clear.
Oh yeah.
When you watch that fight,
I
started the whole business.
Not only that, but it's his gun. It's not like Tim Kang owned or brought a gun.
But nobody knows that at this point. However,
no, you're right. Nobody knows that at this point.
At this point, they're just working real fast because of the sarin gas and the terrorism.
Sarin gas, yeah.
And so, yeah, the sarin gas. So I think that what's going to happen, of course, is that they will start to do the local FBI field office. And
we'll actually look into this guy.
We'll look
do
into
thing.
This.
Okay.
And then he will get off and he will be able to go home at least and have his daughter. Now,
I feel like that marriage isn't going to work out.
That's my prediction. But
I don't think that's going to work out. But he might get custody of the daughter. Who knows?
Yeah, well, considering that she was continuing to...
She was having an affair with a terrorist and he's the guy, the hero that saved the FBI building. Yeah, I think he might be able to manage getting custody of his daughter.
Yeah, she was not, as she said, well, yeah, I was trying to cut it off, but no, I lied to him. Well, yeah, no wonder he was going crazy. You're still lying to me?
Yeah.
It was one time?
He knew about the affair. He was willing to forgive you and work on your marriage, but you kept having the affair? Jesus Christ, woman.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
So, so we're going to have a happy ending.
You're right. In our head, there's a happy ending to this episode. And again,
yeah, this
I do want to make clear that I agree with you 100%. Like, it's a really good episode entirely down to Tim Kang's desperate performance as
he
this
was
guy who's
just
like,
whoa.
He looks completely different. He is, you know, he is a little bit doughy. He is clearly, like, utterly out of his element. He is scrambling. Like, it's such a good performance. And it's so different than I'd ever seen him before.
Yeah, and what I say, I mean, this is up there with the Tim Curry performance.
Yeah, for just being like a complete transformation of the way you normally see an actor.
And that they, and not only that, that they just take over the whole episode.
Oh, no, yeah, where they just own the whole episode.
Yeah, they own the whole thing from beginning to end.
Yeah.
You don't really care about all the rest
the
of
investigation. It's just like, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, can we get back to Tim Kang? Can we can we check what's going on? What's going on with Tim Kang? Can we check on Tim Kang now?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, let's get back to that part of the story. Yeah. So yeah, but again, I cannot stress enough that this man's plan
was
to detonate some gas bombs in the airtight trunk of a car.
The car, yeah.
Like, so it was never going to do anything. You absolute buffoon.
Yeah.
This episode. All right. Let's move to the third episode. The third and by far least interesting episode.
I was going to say, and you know, this is the episode where you go, well, yeah, okay.
Well, I mean, it has one good thing going for it, which we'll talk about when we get there.
Till death do us part.
Yeah.
When two brides-to-be are found dead in Savannah, Georgia, and a third is reported missing, the BAU determines the crimes were committed by a female suffering from mental health issues and severe rejection. Meanwhile, Garcia grows increasingly concerned as she attempts to identify the Dirty Dozen.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is where it's leading with her finding out about the computer program that was used to find them. Like, she used 12 bots, and that's the Dirty Dozen. Although, in retrospect, watching that first episode, I feel like he didn't have time to find out about the bots she was using to chase him and about the Dirty Dozen, because they caught him within, like, you know, 24 hours. Yeah. So they would have had to, like, they're in reverse what the Dirty Dozen means doesn't really track logically at all. Like, it doesn't really make sense what they say the Dirty Dozen means later on, because they're like, well, she used 12 bots to try and track the assassins. And I'm like, well, that's good and all, but how could the killer, who's been, like, living in a basement and just murdering people who hired him, have known they were using 12 bots to try and track her? He doesn't seem like the guy who was in constant verbal contact, especially because he can't talk, with the hacker who works for them. Yeah, it just seems like a weird thing for them to do retroactively. But anyway, yeah. Let's talk about the actual episode, which is, again, not a fantastic episode. It's just not, because there's this problem at the core of the episode where, right, and this is something I talk about all of the time on the show, so please forgive me for doing it one more time, but there's this problem that the episode does where they want the killers, right?
Uh-huh.
To have found out something mysteriously and gotten somewhere surprising and blah, 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 right? And the problem is, when they do this, you assume later in the episode, right, we're going to figure out how the killer did it. And we never do, because it's not a well-written show. Because, like, there will be a piece of evidence that sends them down a path, right, and then they'll turn out to be wrong, and then we find out who really did it. Right. It won't fit with the piece of evidence we found earlier. And it won't. So you're like, well, did they just forget about that piece of evidence? And how does that fit in? And it doesn't, because it's not a well-written show. And this episode is one of the worst examples of it, because you can't imagine a situation where anyone would go anywhere with this woman. Like, you can't contrive of a situation where these brides would leave a bachelorette party with this woman who's creepy and too intense and unable to have a conversation.
Yeah.
How? How is she getting these women to go away with her?
Yeah, that's how you... Oh, I don't know.
And, like, the episode doesn't work because of it. And it's one of these things where at the start of the episode, we're like, obviously the killer must be luring them out somehow. And I'm like, great, let's see. Because the first woman we see in the episode happens to wander off and gets killed. And I mean, it's like the idea that, like, the ridiculous idea that someone is like, that a bachelorette is left completely alone at her bachelorette party to wander off out of the bar just seems weird to me. I haven't been to a lot of bachelorette parties, just the one. I have been to a bachelorette party. That might sound strange, but it is true. But you know what? Like, at no point were people just like, especially the bride, wandering off on her own. That just doesn't happen. And the idea that it could have happened three times. Because it's not like she clubbed the woman in the alley and murdered her right there. She has to knock out this woman, like, tie her up, and carry her to a nearby car and get her out of there. None of which seems plausible, or that she could pull off. Like, I don't believe that this woman could have pulled off anything the episode is telling us that she pulled off.
Yeah, because the initially when you hear about it, you assume that she's clubbed them in the alley and left them by the dumpster, right?
Exactly.
That's the assumption you make. Well, yeah, okay, I can buy that one.
But no, it turns out she takes them back to her shop to torture them.
Yeah.
Before then carrying them to a different alley.
Yeah. Once you find out her modus operandi, right? Yeah. You just go, but going back, how does that work? As you say, how would anyone have gone with her?
Anywhere with this woman.
Anywhere.
No. There's just no way, right? Okay, I'm glad there's going to be no pushback on this episode.
No, there's going to be no pushback on that. As I said, in the beginning,
before you know what's going on, yeah.
But then when you have this idea of she's keeping this girl in the basement, I'm going, now she's keeping the girl in the basement for longer because she doesn't want to do it, but
yeah.
Part of her psyche is saying, no, this is wrong. And the other part of her psyche is telling her to do it. So,
yes. So she's conflicted. Maybe she didn't kidnap the other two women. Maybe they literally were just clubbed and put in an alley. But it still raises the question, how did she get them outside during their own bachelorette parties?
Yeah. You know, like if they were going to go out for a cigarette, their friends would have joined them.
Oh, and hey, spoiler alert, if in Savannah, Georgia, two brides have been killed at their bachelorette party in the past 2 weeks, I feel like new upcoming brides would be a frigging lot more careful at their bachelorette parties, or maybe just not have bachelorette parties.
Yeah.
Because it's like, the whole idea of a bride-to-be being murdered at her bachelorette party is something that might... If it's ever happened in the history of America, it maybe has only happened once. And for it to happen twice in 2 weeks in the same city? Like, why is everyone not up in arms? These are pretty women, pretty upper class women getting brutally murdered at their bachelorette party. Like, this is the kind of thing that would throw the entire country would pay attention to.
Yes, it would make Fox News. It would make CNN. It would be all over the 24 hours a day.
So yeah, the idea that anyone is still having a bachelorette party in Savannah, Georgia, after this woman has started killing people is ludicrous. There's just no way.
Yeah, after the second one, that would have been it. The third one.
Yeah, would have shut down that city.
You would think.
Oh, my God.
Well, I don't know. It is Georgia.
Yeah, okay, it is Georgia.
Yeah, no, I mean.
I say that. That's kind of naive, Danny. They currently have a plague in Georgia, and they're not shutting the city down for that.
Yeah, so.
And I would respond, the plague doesn't only kill 20-something upper-class brides-to-be.
Yeah, and so, the fact is that they are these upper class brides to be. Like, they all belong, and their parents would have been screaming and hollering.
They're society people.
The first one.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
I don't know, absolutely. And I mean, the episode itself, they have some pretty silly ideas. Like, there's this moment where Derek notices that Tara is... Tara has a dent on her finger because she takes off her engagement ring whenever she goes to work. And I'm like, why?
Well, we know why.
Well, we know why. She's a creepy person who has problems with her fiance. And the problem is she's a psychopath, but that's another conversation for later.
We'll get to.
Yeah. But it's like, and then she's like, wait a minute. Maybe that, like, people always flirt with people who are engaged more. Maybe the guy this woman is obsessed with just recently got engaged, and that's why she's starting to murder people. I'm like, but that's wrong.
Yeah. Well, the whole thing is wrong. Like,
all of their guesses are just
everything
wrong.
Everything is completely off the mark.
Oh, yeah. Now, like, every guess they make is just wrong.
Yeah. No, I mean, maybe, you know, it's, it does, but their clue should have been right away with the first two. They weren't sexually assaulted.
Yeah. That's all you need to know, that a woman is responsible. The thing that tips them off that it's a woman is that, well, only a woman would ever call another woman a slut. I'm like,
are you out of your mind?
I don't know if you're familiar with the internet, but I'm fairly certain that's not true.
That was the dumbest thing I heard.
It's such a dumb line, right?
That was the dumbest thing in the episode.
Like, only a woman would call another woman a slut. Nope.
Let's go watch season 1 to 10 of Criminal Minds, right? And see if, like, that's the case.
I guarantee you're going to be disappointed, show.
Yeah. You know, I mean, that was the stupidest line in the show. Yeah,
it's probably the stupidest line in the whole episode.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it was just like.
But no, like, saying that only women do ligature strangulation?
Are you out of your mind? Go back and watch the first 10 seasons of this show.
Men always strangle with their hands. Only women use cords. Are you not familiar with BTK? He's kind of famous.
How come Reed didn't come up with BTK? You know?
Oh, God. I mean, this is almost as bad as the time they're like, you know, if you interpret the act of torturing someone by forcing their mouth open and torturing bleach down their throat, then if you interpret that as poison, then this killer is probably a woman because only women poison people.
I know.
I actually want to go back and check to see if the line about strangulation is. Oh, no, it can't be JJ, because she's not back from maternity leave yet. No. JJ tends to always get the worst lines, and I feel so sorry
for
her.
No, it was Aisha, actually.
Yeah, it was Aisha Tyler. Yeah, it was Tara who got that line.
Who came up with that brilliant piece of observation.
I know. God.
Must be a woman, because only women use sluts.
Only women use rope to strangle people.
And like, rope to strangle people. Yeah.
Would only say slut and use rope to strangle. Like, no, come on. This is just... This is the worst profiling you people have ever done. And what was the other thing? There was another...
Well, they went back to the well, of course, of being off your meds.
That's true. They do that a lot. And I gotta say, one thing that I genuinely like about this episode is that we have that rarest thing, a victim who is really good at managing the situation.
Yes, not initially.
But, you know, when the chips are down, she does manage the situation really well. She's not great like Scarecrow Lady or woman who pretends
that... Well, it is her sister.
Oh, it is her sister. Yeah, obviously. So she does know her. or like the queen of this, the woman who you like found a man who thinks he's her boyfriend in her apartment ready to murder her, and she's just like, no, awesome at dealing with it. I mean, she gets killed anyway because her actual boyfriend shows up, but fantastic at dealing with the situation, and it's so rare that happens on the show. Yeah. It's genuinely nice to see that. And I gotta say, the episode has as close to a happy ending as the episode possibly could.
Yes.
Like, that couple will be fine. She's gonna go back to the mental institution probably forever.
Yeah,
But
well,
honestly,
that's
going to
be people,
yeah. She's killed three people. She's going to be in that mental institution forever. She's never getting out. But honestly, the couple will be fine. She's going back to the mental institution. it'll be the best possible outcome pretty much for everybody. So on that note, it's not a dire episode in the same way that the plotting of the first two episodes this week are dire. Like, you can say, oh, well, I don't like how X, Y, and Z happened, right? But at the same time, I can't believe it. Once you get over the idea that there's no way this woman would have ever been able to get her victims to come with her, if you just take that as read, the rest of the episode works on fairly logical grounds. They figure, okay, well, what do all of the killer has to have met all of these women? Where do all brides go? Let's check if they all use the same vendors for their upcoming weddings. Turns out they all use the same florist. Oh, this woman's got mental problems, blah, 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 blah. And his history of violence. Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, it all tracks logically, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not a terrible episode.
No.
You just feel sorry for that sister and her fiance.
Yeah. And the two of them will manage to work through this.
Oh,
I think Hotch was really good. And I think the boyfriend playing into it was really good. So, you know, I mean, they all, they didn't miss a beat going, okay, yeah, the FBI, I know this is a crazy situation. So that was fine.
Yeah.
And I think it was that part of the episode, the only thing in this whole episode that really bothered me was, why does Garcia think that she can identify the Dirty Dozen?
I don't know.
I don't know why anybody thinks that
she can identify, pull this off.
Anybody could identify the targets of these hitmen.
Yeah. Why would you be able to?
Yeah. Why would you be able to? You can't.
It's all happening internally in like, a group of hit people have people they want to kill, right? They're planning to kill. And she's like, I'll figure it out. But how would you figure that out? Yeah. You would have to have access to who was paying them and, you know, where they're going. But you've already done the $40,000 search. You've already found out everything you can about this guy's bank records. So what do you have left to search? And the answer is nothing.
And then the other thing is that once this guy is caught, do you think that this group of hitmen
is going to use the same system ever? Yeah. And women.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why would they ever, under any circumstance, use the same systems?
Yeah. They would find a new way to do this. And they have the world's best hacker and the world's best computer guy working for them. So
exactly. So it should be relatively easy for them to find a new way to get paid. Yeah. So the idea that she thinks she can track them, you're right. It's kind of ludicrous that she even thinks this would ever be possible.
Yeah. Why any of them think, like Derek seems to think she'll find a way. Well, no, there's no way to find out who they are because they don't even necessarily know. Who?
Before they get, well, I mean, theoretically, they think at this time there are 12 people on their hit list to kill. So, okay. So theoretically, that list exists somewhere, but because they know nothing about him or his partners or how the people get approached for jobs, you're right. There's no conceivable way that anyone could think that she would have the facilities to catch them.
She's either already got the 12 because they've done the $40,000 check.
Or there's no way.
Yeah. Now, as far as I can tell, that what they should be doing is going to see who paid those $40,000 and saying, okay, who the hell did you want killed?
Yeah. What you want to do is, and I think the show is saying
that still wouldn't probably stop any of it because.
Well, you know, what could have happened, right? The one thing that would have helped them find him, find these guys, is so the guy with the grenade hand, who's the one guy who hired him recently who survives, right?
Yeah.
Say to him, how did you find these people? How did you find murderers to murder someone for you?
Yeah.
Because that is the lead you would use. I mean, it's like last season with the criminals who ran the "we can get you anything you want" crime syndicate, right? Like, well, why didn't they talk to the guy who bought the legs about how he heard about this and how he tracked them, and just like track how he got in touch with these people, and that'll give you the leg up you need to tracking them down. But they just give up on that, even though we know for a fact that these guys all just have a website they go to where they bid on women to murder. So, I mean, obviously this guy who bought the legs, even if he doesn't know about the murder, like, bidding on people to murder website, he has some inkling of how this world works, because he was able to go on the internet and buy some severed legs.
Yeah, so.
And it's the absolute same thing this week, which is, once you find out how this guy found out about the killer, like, he found someone to murder somebody, his ex-wife or whatever, like, yeah. Whoever it is he had killed. Right. He found somebody to do that online. And so all you have to do is follow the same steps he followed, and you will get there eventually.
Yeah.
And they don't.
No, of course not. So anyway.
Yeah. It's a frustrating season in a lot of ways.
Yes. Well, anyway. So I think that's it.
I guess that'll be that for this week.
Yeah.
Ironically for us, the last time we're going to talk about just episode by episode Criminal Minds.
Yes.
Because you've revealed that this is our redo.
Yeah. Well, I just had to.
No, you had to. Because, it's worth acknowledging that it feels different now.
Yeah. Like, it feels very different.
It is jarring to go back and watch the earliest episode. Well, not earliest, but earlier episodes and be like, oh, wow. Like, as late as season 11, it was still a watchable TV show.
Yeah. Yeah. You understand
why people stuck with it as long as they did.
Yeah. We were much harder on season 11. Okay. Yeah. And probably
the first time
simply because, but that's only in retrospect.
Yeah.
That's
You listen to the next 7 episodes of this show, you're going to find us being probably harder than we should be.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we weren't thinking about season 12, 13, 14,
15.
And, well, we hadn't watched 15 yet.
That's true. Yes.
But yeah, like, and 15. So it's like, it's kind of huge, the transformation. And
yeah,
not just the transformation, but how fast the transformation happened.
Yeah, it just fell apart.
Yeah, this show just collapsed.
Yeah. Anyway.
So quickly, after the loss of Thomas Gibson.
We'll talk
all right, so I guess that's that. Let's wrap it up now. Thank you for listening to the podcast. We always appreciate it. If you have any questions, if you have any comments, if there's any profiling related fiction you think we should check out, please drop us a line at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. We'll see you back here next Thursday for another episode. Is there something we're watching between, is there a Tuesday thing going on right now?
I don't know.
She doesn't know.
I think so. Don't ask
but
me.
It's not worth looking into. I'm not going to pressure
probably
you.
Probably Gone.
No. Gone was between season 10 and 11.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yeah. Beyond Borders. No.
No, that's next season.
That's next season. I don't know.
What the hell did we watch between
the Alienist?
Maybe it was The Alienist. Anyway, but the point is, there might be a Tuesday show, but, and we can't, you know, the big thing though, is that we will see you on Sunday for a regular Sunday show, which wasn't a thing we were doing when we originally recorded season 11.
That's right.
So you will not hear us encouraging you to listen to the Sunday show in all of our normal episodes about season 11.
Yeah.
So yeah, should be fun. We will see you back here for all of that. But until then, I'm going to say au revoir.
And have a good weekend.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.